Okay, in 3, 2, 1, let's go.
Hello, interwebs, and welcome to Close Up. I'm your co-host, Joe.
And I'm Justin. Today, we're talking about Fantastic Four, The First Steps.
Yay!
So, yeah, medium shot. Let's talk about our hype level going into this. What was your expectation going into The First Steps?
I kind of thought it was going to be bad. Not going to lie, I thought it was going to be bad.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, okay, it's because Marvel's track record, let's put this generously, has been inconsistent in the last 6 years. Thunderbolts was a step in the right direction as far as, okay, well, you're maybe getting our hopes up that the brand can deliver at least an average level of quality again. And Fantastic Four, I feel like that had a lot more riding on it, though. Because as far back as, I'll say even Fanforstic from 2015, people saw the failure of that movie and said, oh man, if only Kevin Feige and co. got their hands on this property, let's see what the MCU could do with the Fantastic Four IP. Just bring it back home to Marvel and we'll finally get a good version of these characters. And then by the time the rights did revert back and the movie was being in production, the tone definitely changed in public discourse. People were more afraid. Oh man, with the state of the MCU now, Marvel's Fantastic Four is going to be as bad as all the other ones. If they made it 10 years ago, it would have been S-tier superhero movie. So a lot of people basically were going in with zero expectations. I had cautious optimism. I really desperately hoped that Marvel would not mess up one of their traditionally biggest IPs. Because you got to go back to 2008 when Phase 1 started and they were setting up characters like Iron Man, Captain America, Thor, household names today. The Avengers were probably more like C-listers back in 2008. Mm-hmm. Back then, the big people were X-Men, Spider-Man, Fantastic Four. Those were the ones that got movies in the 2000s first because those were the Marvel properties that were generally the most beloved. And X-Men has always been hit or miss. Spider-Man had some, you know, great movies at the time, and Fantastic Four has always gotten the short end of the stick in terms of, there's a lot of nostalgia nowadays for the 2005-2007 ones, but those were never considered good at the time.
Mm-hmm.
It's really more people who grew up with them after the fact that think, oh, well, those were fun. I don't know why people hate on them so much. But they're still generally not that well-loved in public discourse. So now we have the new one. And getting into our close-up now, this will be a full spoiler discussion for the record. So my overall thoughts on the film are it's an average script saved by fantastic actors and production design.
Yeah, that's about right. That pretty much sums it up.
Yeah, it is not as amazing as you might hope, thinking, oh wow, Marvel's Fantastic Four finally come back home. It's not like fulfilling those high ambitions I had 10 years ago. But it feels like, okay, you just delivered a good movie. I'm happy with that at this point.
It's good enough.
It's good enough for now, and it's called First Steps, which I think works on a metaphorical level to me. Is, all right, Fantastic Four, First Steps. What are your next ones going to be? Can you keep the momentum rolling and the goodwill you built up for this one, for Doomsday and Secret Wars and beyond in the sequels? Because I do really like this world that they set up. This offshoot world in the multiverse, very retro-futuristic 1960s vibe, and they seem to be the only heroes on that world.
Yeah, it was kind of an interesting setup having them be, like, it seems like their versions of Earth basically only heroes. And I thought that was really interesting how they played into that.
I think what's most telling with Marvel in general that they're probably the world's only heroes is that no other heroes seem to exist in New York City. And as every longtime Marvel fan knows, 90% of Marvel heroes are concentrated in New York City.
Everything bad always happens in New York City. That's it.
Yeah. You got Spider-Man, Fantastic Four. I think in some versions, the X-Men are based in New York as well. What other ones? I think Doctor Strange, his Sanctum Sanctorum is based in New York. Daredevil, a lot of the Defenders. Like Luke Cage, Jessica Jones, they're based in New York. Just a lot of characters are based in New York. I think, yeah, Avengers Tower, Iron Man, the Avengers were based in New York for a very long time. And yeah. Fantastic Four seems to be it. The Silver Surfer comes down and calls them out. Are you Earth's protectors? Yep. All right. I don't see Spider-Man swinging in here, so I guess you're it.
Yeah, nobody else responded. Nobody got involved when it was literally a worldwide crisis that everybody on, like, all the governments of Earth worked together to solve this problem.
And they all seem to be coordinating on behalf of the Fantastic Four. They were all, when it came to that relay situation where they're all on the headsets talking to the world governments of the United Nations, everyone seemed to be looking to them.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't, it was just kind of every government of the world was relying on these people. And the impression I get is they're very important to this world in particular, especially Reed and Sue, where Sue seems to be a diplomat at the United Nations. I'm not exactly sure what her role is, but she seems to be very well respected on the world stage. You even have people like Mole Man, who seems to have been a recurring rival of theirs in this universe for some time, but him and his people have a fondness and respect for Sue in particular. And it's her connections with him that helped save New York City in the end when Galactus comes. So that's her role. And I would not be surprised if a lot of the technologies of this retrofuturistic Earth are derived from the mind of Reed Richards or people like him. He seems to be very much the mad scientist of this world whose big inventions have made him world famous and propelled his Earth into a retro-futuristic golden age that seems relatively peaceful and well put together on the whole.
Well, I think if they had them in a world full of heroes, it would just feel lesser because it's like, oh, you got your powers from going to space and space radiation. Well,
yeah,
you know, compared to the rest of all the heroes, it's like, well, that's not very impressive. But in this world, it's like, okay, they're the first astronauts to space, basically, and got screwed up and came back to be heroes, right? So
yeah,
I think it would take something away if they actually had more heroes around, basically.
Although, kind of an offshoot of that point, but one thing I liked is that they all seem to be relatively well-known and respected as scientists before they all went up.
Mm-hmm.
Their powers made them exceptional in the public eye, but they already seem to be very highly respected in their respective fields already. You know, even someone like Ben, who wasn't necessarily the best scientist, he's still a above-average pilot who... that was important for that particular mission.
Mm-hmm.
And it only so happened that when they hit the cosmic radiation, they got superpowers and wow, we're more powerful. Oh yeah, I remember talking to you about this after we left theaters, but I feel like that early news segment, which is in a montage form, breaking down the origin of the Fantastic Four kind of as a documentary style, I feel like that documentary omitted Doctor Doom intentionally. I feel like the story makes it seem like Doom wasn't there with them, but I feel like that's the documentary retroactively cherry-picking pieces of history to kind of cut him out of the narrative.
Yeah, I can see that, not wanting to be like, yeah, there was this other guy. Like Vox Machina did it.
Yeah. Yeah, with I don't remember. Tiberius.
But they cut him right out. They're like, yeah. There we go. All good.
And it's even funny going like tangentially on Vox Machina, even stuff like in the show, they have like these earrings that they can communicate, like walkie-talkies. But Tiberius made them for the team in the home campaign before the act, like, and they used those the rest of the campaign, even when Tiberius was gone. But he was like a sorcerer. So when you in the show, they just kind of got rid of that entirely, because mm-hmm. Maybe it's because it's something Tiberius did. But yeah, I feel like that's whatever Doctor Doom's contributions were, I think they've just been erased from history. And you know he's there because there was an empty seat at the United Nations meeting for Latveria. And he does cameo, back of his head, in the mid-credits scene. So Doom is out there and operational. And based on Sue's reaction in the end, I feel like she knows him.
Mm-hmm.
He is a quantity in this universe. I like that they showed enough, just that empty seat with Latveria was enough. It spoke volumes about what his role in this world is. The entire United Nations is there. Most of them are clapping for Sue. Everyone's on board. He didn't even show up for that meeting. He doesn't want to give them the satisfaction. And I would like to see Victor Von Doom explored in a sequel. I mean, I guess Doomsday is going to be...
I guess that's where it's going to be.
Yeah. Yeah, which is... I don't know how they're going to play that, because we haven't been introduced to him at all, and his first introduction is going to be in Doomsday, as far as I know. Yeah. And now we have to get all this exposition dump about, okay, well, he's got this rivalry with Reed Richards, and I'm assuming because of his introduction in this movie, just the back of his head, that his rivalry with the Fantastic Four is going to be front and center in Doomsday. And the main Avengers from 616 are just going to have to be messing around with all that, plus your X-Men from the Fox universe thrown in there for good measure. It just seems like a messy multiverse movie, but I hope it stays focused on the rivalry with the Fantastic Four.
Well, I do think having the Fantastic Four be more of the center focus for Doomsday would be actually good, because
they're fresh in our minds.
Well, they're also a united team, so it feels like that's you have a good core, where everybody else right now, nothing, even the teams that are there are still kind of pretty tenuous. And
actually, that's a good point.
Nobody's really connected.
That's a very interesting idea, because in the terms of the multiverse, you have the Fantastic Four, a family, a connected team. You have the Fox X-Men, which, despite a lot of hardships, pretty well-rounded, connected team. And then you have the 616 Avengers, which is duking it out between Sam Wilson and the Thunderbolts. The mainline Marvel Universe teams are so fractured and split right now, and then they're going to be running into all these stable teams from across the multiverse,
mm-hmm.
who have long shared histories and mostly get along. That could be an interesting thematic undercurrent, now maybe. That you're bringing it up.
Kind of do it like how they did Infinity War, where you've got your like three separate goings on, basically.
All these different squads.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the Avengers and the Avengers with a Z trying to... they're just at each other's throat.
They're fighting over branding in like a legal battle.
Yeah.
The whole time. What are you guys doing? Aren't you superheroes? Yeah.
We basically set up a capitalistic, boring version of Civil War here, and this is what we're going into the new multiversal battle with. It's a branding issue. They can't even agree on who gets to call themselves the Avengers anymore.
Oh.
Is it?
I really don't want to see that. That sounds terrible.
It sounds like a good comedic relief subplot, but also...
But that's our 616 people.
I know. That's, like,
we're supposed to care about them more, aren't we?
Exactly. And that's why it could easily be a mess. It could be interesting if that's where all that stuff comes to a resolution and we finally just get a united Avengers front by the end. I can see that being part of a story that we're just kind of making up on the spot. Okay, we're exposed to all these teams who actually work together, so why can't we work together?
I just feel like that's going to be a lot. That movie's going to be packed.
I don't know if there's... I don't know how many people are in this compared to something like Infinity War, but Infinity War gives me at least a little bit of hope that they can balance it. They've done it before.
All right. We know for a fact that if it's Doomsday, Fantastic Four is going to show up. And it's called Avengers Doomsday. So at least one team of the Avengers is going to show up. So that drama is there too.
Yep.
So to me, having to do... Okay, we got to introduce Doom. We got to get that backstory set up. Then we got to, you know, get the Avengers in and the Fantastic Four have to jump universes. I feel like just that alone already feels cluttered to me.
Well, that's why I'm curious what they're going to do with Avengers Secret Wars, because you have Doomsday Secret Wars back to back. I'm like, okay, are we just focusing on some Avengers this time, more in the next movie? Are they all there for the setup and then we pass the baton for the next one? This one's more about maybe the Fantastic Four and, I don't know, Sam Wilson's team, and then the next one's more about the Fantastic Four and the Thunderbolts or something.
It's just the Fantastic Four and Sam Wilson.
Sure.
That's it. Yeah, I run this team called the Avengers. You guys are in, right?
Yeah.
Where's the rest of your team? It's you guys and me.
Yeah.
Oh.
So we're definitely off tangent about this movie in particular, but I feel like it's telling that we go on these long tangents about what it could mean more than the actual movie itself, because I think it sets up a lot of fun potential for later, but that's nearly more top of mind for me than the actual movie.
Yeah.
Which is just good. I mean, I don't have serious complaints about it. I mean, as we're breaking down the elements of its filmic structure, we'll definitely get into some things. But I'll start off with... I'll start off with some critique, because I have a lot of positive things to say. Most of my critiques about this are about the script in general, which, to be clear, is not bad. I think I'll praise one element of it, is they really tone down on that quote-unquote Marvel humor. I mean, of course, it's still generally lighthearted, but it wasn't quips every 2.5 seconds, and it was more realistic banter. Still funny, still light, but not...
Undercutting the emotions, yeah.
It let the emotions breathe a little bit more. There were some good dramatic scenes with no humor in them whatsoever, which felt a little bit weird and refreshing for Marvel. I was glad to see they let some scenes breathe. But the main problem with it is its structure. It's very... This was your point you were saying a couple days after, was that it's very front-loaded with exposition.
Well, the way I described it, when you look at the three-act structure, is the first act is a massive exposition dump.
It's a montage of backstory and
it's just
disjointed action set pieces.
Yeah, and then you finally get, and it's like a third of the way into the movie, you finally get to the movie. And I just found that it just took them so long to get through that. And there were certain portions where I'm like, am I watching like a really long trailer?
Yeah, that's what the first act felt like. And then the third act felt like, okay, we're just doing the superhero battle with Galactus on the streets of New York. It's like you're basically just focusing on the action scenes and the payoff at that point. So the real meat of this movie, the only real things we're talking about, are in the second act.
Even the second act has a montage of, oh, Earth's getting ready. Like,
yeah,
the second act isn't even a complete act of just the movie.
Yeah, it basically starts with them blasting off into space and ends with them getting ready for Galactus. Basically, yeah. The whole movie happens in that span.
Yeah, basically.
So if it's a 2-hour movie, really only an hour of it is like, oh, actual movie plot. And it's like a whole act for exposition and a whole act for payoff.
Yeah.
And like an hour where the plot's actually moving in current time.
come on, the big fights never count as plot, okay? That's no. just a big fight. There's nothing there, okay?
No. We know superhero third acts, what they're going to be by now. And I don't really think there's much ways to avoid that without making an audience feel cheated. I'm here for big action set pieces. Give me Fantastic Four versus Galactus. Which is good, and we'll get to it. But it's just, as a movie structure, it's really just exposition dumping and only a bit of plot in the middle. And it doesn't help that the dialogue is very subtext focused. It is good drama. It's very well delivered by its cast, but it's missing some subtleties. I feel like a lot of it is just sort of spelling out how characters feel at a certain time when they're the ones talking. I feel like the actors, they're, if one character in a scene is kind of dumping, they're saying how they feel, but their reacting partner is playing the subtext. It was like in one scene, usually just like one person was dumping and somebody was reacting. I'm like, okay, there is some restraint here I'm seeing, but it's still not that subtle.
Somehow the most subtle, like, and subtextual stuff was all for Ben.
Yeah.
the one character who's all CGI and oh.
That's true. Who never...
He's got the subtle acting going on. Oh my God.
Like, it was... I know it was a shot from the trailer, but like the scene, he looks at the documentary of himself on the TV and he gets kind of sad and he doesn't say anything about it. Or when he's kind of hanging around the school and the synagogue, I guess, and, you know, and meeting that woman there, and like he's, most of that conversation, they're not really talking about themselves. They're talking about the neighborhood they grew up in and a bit about his life. Like, it never really gets personal, but you can feel a subtextual connection there.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you there. Those scenes probably did have the most subtlety to them, but they did speak a lot about his character. I also like that one scene. I think my favorite scene with Ben was the one when he's talking to Reed about Reed has all these insecurities and doubts about how he's handling things. And once again, this is what I'm saying. There's like usually one character who's like dumping stuff. And then Ben kind of just comes back with, you know, you're not that smart. You're not as smart as you think you are. Like, can you cook? Well, that's more of an art than a science. Did you pass your driver's test?
Fair. Kind of puts Reed in his place a little bit.
He didn't have to dress him down with a whole lecture. It felt like friendly banter. And I'm like, oh, I feel the connection between these guys. These guys are, I mean, the movie set up top, they're best friends, but this is like their scene in the movie that shows their dynamic. And I really like that.
Mm-hmm.
He's the only one who can humble Reed in a way. And that's fun. And, yeah, it's, but really it's that first act, which I think is the most problematic because it effectively kills rewatchability.
Yeah, you'd be incredibly bored.
For the first half an hour.
Yeah.
Just, okay, we know who they are.
Like, I'd almost want to skip through it.
Yeah, now, not to play comparison games, because, I mean, we're going to play a little bit of comparison games here. You pointed out the big difference between that and Superman, which a lot of people, you know, some people whine about that first title card being like, really? You're spelling out our exposition in text right now in that first minute? But it's just like a minute long. It got done and over with, and then he crashes into the snow and we start the movie. Fantastic Four has half an hour of buildup. Which, fine, when you're watching this movie once, I like to see that stuff. It's fun. But like you said, I'm going to probably want to skip it on rewatch. And then find out that the movie doesn't have as much meat as you think, because okay, I want to skip right to the plot, and oh, we only got like an hour of plot after I skip that, and then we're into the action scenes. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really fun time at the movies, but it's just, I don't think it's gonna have the legs in the long term in terms of people remembering it super fondly. They'll remember bits and pieces about it fondly. It's a good movie. It's entertaining. But I just think in the ongoing discourse of all-time great superhero movies, it's just an above-average one with amazing production design and cinematography and visual elements, making it stand out from the pack.
I gotta say that the CGI in this movie is really well done.
Yeah.
Especially like Silver Surfer, Galactus. Galactus looks fantastic. They did some stuff with him to make him really seem big. Like, he's not as in focus as the rest of everything, because realistically, if you were trying to get a shot, you can't have a crisp, clear shot of Sue and Johnny talking up close to the camera with Galactus, everybody being in focus. So, because he's just so big. So they did these things that really sold the effect of how big he was.
He's only partially in focus at any given time.
Yeah, like it was really good. I liked that.
It's and, fun filmmaking. Yeah.
Oh, there was a scene where I don't know how they did it. Mm-hmm. I don't know how they did it. They did a scene entirely lit when they blew the breakers and the power went out and Johnny lights up.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He's lighting the scene.
Oh, yeah.
And I sat there and I looked at it and I was like, my jaw dropped, because I was like,
yeah.
How did they shoot this? How did they do that? It was literally like, it's not like he was off to one side. He was in
the very
center
middle.
Frame and light coming off of him. And I'm like, but how did they shoot this?
That's a very interesting point, which I didn't even notice or think of.
And like, it doesn't look like it. It was so good looking. If it's all like post work to get that done, I don't know what they did to do that. It was pretty incredible. That really shocked me.
Yeah, what did you think of Silver Surfer?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
It looks like intentionally alien and strange.
Yeah, definitely.
It's Uncanny Valley by design, I feel like.
Well, even like to the point where her hair is like
solid
stiff and metal, like it's solid.
It nearly was like an action figure where you move it and the hair moves with it.
The hair is like stuck to the head. Like,
yeah, I noticed that.
I was like, oh, this is, but that really made her stand out and feel like not just, you know, it really made her feel like an alien and like she didn't belong there, which was interesting.
Yeah. I think the only CGI which sort of took me out of it was the baby. Just what they did on the baby, I'm like, this seems a little unnatural.
It was fine. It's passable enough.
But it wasn't in it enough that it was super distracting, but if I'm getting nitpicky.
And I didn't like Ben.
Yeah, you never cared for that, even from the trailer.
The trailer, I was like, I was really hoping it was going to look better. It looks so soft. It just looks fake to me. It doesn't look like, I don't feel like he's made out of rocks. And the practical suit back in 2000s looked better.
Yeah, I do like this look for. See, okay, I have mixed opinions on it because I agree with you when I look at it. It doesn't necessarily feel like rocks. There is an artificiality to it. It doesn't seem rock-like enough. But when I look at his face and the motion capture on it, Eben Moss-Bachra gets to emote a heck of a lot more than Michael Chiklis did 20 years ago in a rubber suit. And the design they used for it strongly evokes that classic Jack Kirby art from the 60s. It's more stylized, it allows for a better performance, but the effect itself, it works, but you know he's kind of made of rocks and it doesn't feel like rocks. It's just, so I understand being mixed on it. It works for me more than it doesn't.
Yeah, like it's fine. I don't know, I kind of wanted to see more from it. I mean, even like a combination of techniques maybe could have made it look a bit better to me, but otherwise, and there was one shot in the movie that looked really, really bad, but the only one time did it like really look bad.
Yeah.
But otherwise, for the most part, the effects all looked really good. And the style of everything was, it had a style. It was going for a style, and it sold it. It looked really good.
Most Marvel projects, going back to the original Iron Man, are basically just our world, and the most interesting thing about it is the central hero in the world crashing through New York skyline buildings and Chitauri, and okay, we're just doing our world, but stuff added on top. This felt distinct from the ground up. I'd never seen Marvel even try to do something with this kind of scale before.
Mm-hmm.
Everything from the costumes to the hairstyles to, there was one scene when Reed's running through the street, I think in that final battle, and I saw like the phone booths in the back, the signs on the signage on the talk shows, the way their apartment is modeled, some of the technologies they have, the robots, the spaceships, everything has that retro-futuristic vibe from the 50s and 60s, which I'm a sucker for in any form. Like, Fallout's one of my favorite games for a reason, largely because of the aesthetic. It's just something that I'm continually gravitated towards, and it's something that the Stan Lee and Jack Kirby comic books had back at the time, and it was a distinct style, which was adapted very well here.
Mm-hmm.
It just feels unique. And I really love the color palette too. Basically the entire thing is some shade of blue or white in basically every scene. Even the grating sort of has a bluish white look to it.
Yeah, and it kind of worked with like a lot of like almost pastel colors in a way. Yeah. And that really gave it a look too.
I don't know if I've ever seen a movie graded quite this way. It would just, it, to look at it just felt unique to me.
Yeah, it looked good. I was very glad, especially with Marvel. Their color grading has not been great for a while.
Yeah.
They love this gray, boring, flat tone.
Yep.
I don't know why they do the color grading like that.
Yep.
It's so boring. You have these nice, bright costumes, and it feels like they're like, no, it's too bright. Crank the saturation down. What?
You go from Thunderbolts to this, it's Whiplash.
Oh, yeah. Thunderbolts is like...
All the Earth-based terrestrial heroes have this look that you're describing.
Yeah.
The space-based stuff, like Guardians of the Galaxy, that's always been a little bit...
Oh, yeah.
On the
brighter
side. But, and then you have, like, your Spider-Man trilogy that got, like, certain characters got to have bright...
Yeah, but it's the Avengers palette where they apply it to everybody. It's like they took the palette from Civil War and applied it to everything Avengers.
At a certain point,
and,
yeah.
I distinctly do not like Civil War, and that's... A lot of it has to do with how flat, boring, and ugly it looks. Everybody's like, well, the airport fight! I'm like, that is some of the worst... that is some of the worst action I've ever seen in Marvel. It just looks terrible on camera. It's so flat and so boring.
These are very bright worlds with big characters, colorful costumes, and you present it in the most boring way possible.
Yeah.
Which I feel like is the worst lesson learned from stuff like Christopher Nolan's movies, where you're trying to make them feel grounded. And you go so far in the direction of feeling grounded that it becomes boring. You take an exciting thing and made it boring. Fantastic Four fully leans into its bright comic book roots for the better. It does feel very much like reading a comic book. And, you know, once again, this isn't even like a comparison game thing, but I just love how this month we've had Superman and the Fantastic Four, two movies that are unashamed of their comic book roots and fully leaning into it in a way I don't think I've ever really seen comic book movies do in the last 20 years. It just feels like, oh, we're not trying to make superheroes fit in our world anymore. We're fully embracing that these are distinct worlds with aesthetics, and we're just adapting them more wholeheartedly now, instead of trying to make people feel like there's a, like they're grounded in a reality. Like, yes, they're grounded in a reality, but not ours. And that's an important distinction.
Well, something that I liked that they did where they grounded it is they kind of did the opposite of Ant-Man, like the Quantumania. Your big bad guy who's supposed to be really powerful wasn't defeated. He was just moved away.
Yeah,
that's right. True. They didn't really defeat him. And that was the level of grounded it was. Like, it was grounded in its own world. It wasn't grounded in ours. Exactly like you're saying.
Yeah.
But they still left their limitations there. And they didn't have to screw with power scaling to make it believable for something like that. Like,
yeah.
Halfway through the movie, when they introduced us to Galactus, I'm like, how are they going to win?
Yeah. Even at the end, Sue died for the effort and was quickly brought back to life in a deus ex machina courtesy of the baby, but that's fine. The point was, first of all, she's a badass for soloing Galactus. And I saw a great comment on Reddit. They're like, hey, everybody who plays Sue Main on Marvel Rivals is feeling seen right now. Just for how awesome that character is as a combatant. Doesn't get her due praise. This movie is like, oh, she took on a cosmic being single-handedly and yes, died, but she pushed Galactus through the hole.
And that's the thing. It didn't feel unbelievable for her to be able to push him.
Yeah.
Like, they made the whole thing, the whole struggle was trying to get stuff out of the way so that he can't hang on.
Yeah. Ben right? was knocking down the pillars. Johnny was kind of throwing firebolts in his face. Reed was stabbing him in the back.
Yeah, and that just was enough to, you know. And that's what I really liked, is that they didn't have to mess with the power scaling or do anything ridiculous to make it, to have your heroes win, right?
Yeah.
I actually thought for a significant portion of the movie, especially having, like, I think it was in Thunderbolts, they had the little teaser of them coming in on their ship or whatever.
Yeah.
And so I was trying to figure out where that is in the timeline, and I'm like, are they going to lose?
Well, I feel like that's going into this movie, a big fan theory was that they were going to lose. Galactus was going to swallow their world, and the Fantastic Four would have to escape. And that's why the plot had a lot of weight to me, because they chose to keep their son instead of giving it to Galactus, and the whole world is starting to turn on them for it. And knowing those fan theories going in, I was seriously like, is this selfish decision on the part of the Fantastic Four, justifiably selfish, but is this decision going to end up actually dooming their world? Like, that'd be a bit of a bummer going into Doomsday. I don't think these characters would have the mental fortitude to come back from that. They're the reason their whole world got decimated. So part of me enjoyed having the happy ending, but another part of me said, well, it is a multiverse, and we already know from the Thunderbolts teaser that they're going to be in league with everybody else, so do they doom their entire planet? And I really didn't know. Usually with Marvel, you kind of know the status quo is going to be okay. This is probably the first MCU movie since Endgame where I've actually felt like, are they going to lose? Like, how badly? Actually, I shouldn't even say Endgame. I should say Infinity War, because Endgame, I even kind of knew it was going to get resolved. But the first one since Infinity War where I'm like, yeah, I think this could actually go very badly.
Mm-hmm.
And you have my investment to see how that pays off. And the fact that it didn't go badly, well, like I said, a bit mixed on that. I'm like, well, they could have taken a bigger swing. They played it safe.
Which is fine.
The reason I like it is, as you were saying before, it would feel weird having a status quo world where they are interacting with other characters on the regular, and they set up such a cool world from the ground up here that it nearly seems like a waste to just toss it aside and then have this version of the Fantastic Four interact with the gray sludge of 616 as a baseline.
Maybe I don't want to see 616 anymore.
I was seeing some interesting comments online just before we started recording this episode, and people are saying, why wasn't this what the multiverse saga was the entire time? Having all these offshoot movies in different versions of the universes. Like, we spent way too much time in 616 when we could have been doing movies like this that feel like somebody actually cared about what they were making, put in some genuine effort, and took some creative risks. Not with the story, but with the designs of everything. They made choices. And the multiverse saga could have been this the entire time. Still would have been hit or miss, but it would have felt like, okay, at least we got some good standalone adventures on the way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's another thing I really liked about this, is that it feels standalone. You know they're going to cross over with Doomsday, but this story has a beginning, middle, and end in its own separate universe, and you don't need to see a single one of the, I think, 30-plus Marvel movies at this point to understand it. Not a single one. It worked totally on its own. It'll happen to cross over later, but that documentary, you know, like I said, it kills rewatch, but it cuts you kind of caught up on who this world is. You don't need to know a single bit of the MCU. You just watch a movie about a superhero family and they fight a cosmic space monster and save their world, and yay, we won.
Yay.
It's just a fun popcorn movie with the Marvel branding on it.
Yeah.
Hard to ask for too much more there. Just a quick mention of Michael Giacchino's score. He's always very consistent with his score, and I'm not 100%. I might be mixing up my factoids here, but I'm pretty sure he's also the guy who composed The Incredibles 2. So, The Incredibles 1, I think he did 2 as well. But so he's had a bit of experience in a Fantastic Four-ish realm. He's done this before. And I love his title theme. The rest underscore the film very nicely. Michael Giacchino is one of my favorite composers working in Hollywood today. Just everything he does is very consistent. And I'm a guy who likes themes instead of just general tonal mood music, which just seems to be very common. And Michael Giacchino's themes are melodies I come out of the movie remembering, which is a rarity in modern Hollywood. He's more akin to classical Hollywood composers that way. Just suits my fancy more than a lot of them. And we haven't really talked about the family dynamic a heck of a lot. I think the movie does a good job at establishing relationships between basically everybody. We see Johnny and Ben have a dynamic. We see Ben and Reed. We see a little bit of Sue and everybody else. The only one I actually had a problem with was Sue and Reed, as far as dynamic goes. Because the one scene I remember of them like actually having an emotional moment of like deep substance to me was a negative one, where she was basically, when Reed said that, okay, well, I do know in my logical mind that handing him over would be the most logical and ethical thing to do, and she said, I know, I get why you're being you, but being you hurts me sometimes. And those are the kind of scenes I remember more. I'm like, well, yes, they work well together on the whole, but a lot of the movie I'm like, okay, yeah, they had a nice emotional moment at the beginning when she tells him she's pregnant, and okay, they have a nice moment there. But I don't feel like most of the movie I really saw why these two were together. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, there's not really, and I found that their chemistry didn't work too good either. It just felt like they were, like, it's like the, you know, the future divorced couple.
Yeah, that's kind of, that's a good way to put it. I'm like, I felt Pedro Pascal and Vanessa Kirby's chemistry with basically everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
But them together, I'm like, okay, I can see this relationship having some spark. You play off each other decently, but the script is like, I have no reason to see why you guys are paired together. It just tells me that you are, and your friends and family support that, and they like you together. I'm like, the movie's telling me more than demonstrating why. I don't really see how they complement each other that well. I'm like, I know he's the logical one and she's the more emotionally mature one between the two of them. That tends to be their dynamic in the comic books. I'm like, I do see that and their influence on the team in general, but not how that translates to their personal relationship as much.
Mm-hmm. And it's surprising because we did get quite a few scenes where they had personal interactions by themselves.
And they're the least memorable for me.
Yeah.
Or at least they're not memorable because of their relationship. They're memorable because of other things in it. Like, I really like that scene when Reed is trying to scan the baby for the millionth time to see if something's wrong, and she turns her stomach invisible and
there you see, happy.
Yeah, you can kind of like that's a really cool, subtle use of a superpower that I haven't really seen before in a movie. Where I'm like, this is just something you can do with your body. It's just, that was just a really cool showcase of her invisible powers. In a moment where, like, he's looking for trouble with the baby. Yeah, look at him. There.
Listen, maybe their plan down the line is to have them separate, and she's gonna go be with Namor for a bit, and then...
Oh, man.
Maybe that's the plan.
Who knows? It's possible. I mean, yeah, I'm open for whatever they're doing. I think they have a decent, like, it's not bad by any stretch. It's like, okay, you could do better next time. That's all. In that department, I'd like to see more.
And along those lines of it, I would like to see them do more team-up powers.
That's another big thing. I like their relationships in the dialogue scenes, the interpersonal things. But when it comes to fighting as a team, I'm stretching my mind back to the Ultimate Alliance days of you have your team of four and whatever members you had in that video game, they all could combo move off each other. I never got that vibe from this movie where I'm like, you are a well-oiled unit who's been at this for 4 years and you've got combo moves together. I'm like, even the Avengers in some of their early movies were doing combo moves like Iron Man using his repulsor or cap shield or whatever.
Yeah, it just felt like they were all playing different roles in the same fight, but like not ever did they really combo up, you know?
They were all useful individually. The closest thing I could see was, okay, when the thing got whipped into space and Johnny throws him like a human cannonball at Galactus. I'm like, okay, that's a team up moment. But I didn't see a heck of a lot more. I'm like, okay, so you all kind of teamed up to get Galactus through, but I didn't really see how your powers kind of, like, it all felt, like you said, like individuals doing their part, but not, like, team. I just wanted to see more video gaminess.
Or even, like, The Incredibles.
Yeah.
You know, they team each other up.
Yeah, like you team up, I'll knock them down, just... More.
Just
give me more.
If they're supposed to be a team that's a family and they should be the tightest knit team in all of Marvel, they should be a well oiled machine for doing stuff like that. Like, they should be beyond every other team. They should be the ones doing the most teaming up.
Yes. In all of Marvel, they're the family. They're the tightest bunch.
And I think that would have sold their team a bit better, too.
Yeah. I thought it was... Yeah, I thought it was an interesting theme about how, like, they chose not to sacrifice any member of the family. And it was interesting how Sue tried to spin that on a worldwide stage. Like, okay, well, we consider you all family in a way. We're not sacrificing our baby for you guys, but we're not sacrificing you guys for our baby. Like, yeah, that's a good speech. A little too effective, maybe. It kind of quelled everything right away, but... Ah, whatever.
Listen, it was established at the top that she's very influential. She's so good at public speaking that she convinced the mole man to chill out.
I feel like even though the only way I'll kind of let it slide is just because the Fantastic Four in general have built up so much public goodwill that even just this one thing that everyone's mad at them about, like, no, they all fully believe the Fantastic Four will save them in the end. Just because they've come through so many times. Well, that was the thing.
When they come back, they're like, so how'd you win? We didn't.
I like how confident everybody was, too. They're yeah. Like, you came back after the Fantastic Four, back from a month in deep space. So, how did you beat Galactus?
What? What do you mean?
About that. Okay, but like, what? So he tried to make a deal? What was the deal? He said, give up our baby and everything would be fine. Oh. And you didn't? No. Ah! Pitchforks! Flames! Mob the Baxter buildings!
They still had confidence. Everybody still worked with them afterwards. Or else Sue's got some special powers we don't know about yet.
She's like Kilgrave. Power of suggestion, very strong. People will do exactly as she says. Yeah, let's see. Then there's the Silver Surfer, which, you know, her story is fine. The Silver Surfer story I'm familiar with. Herald of Galactus gets a conscience. Or gets the moment to act upon the conscience they've had for a long time. I just like more that it gave Johnny something to do. Like, okay, so him doing the translation thing mattered.
Yeah, they didn't make him
it's not
entirely
just
an idiot like most iterations have. He's still a scientist.
Yeah, I like that it reminds you, no, he was on that original mission for a reason. He's not just because he was Reed's brother-in-law.
Actually, most of the time we see him outside of everybody working, he's in his room working on that.
That's true.
Like, he goes and he's dedicating that time to it.
I also like how Reed is kind of dismissive of him. And it shows what kind of patriarch of the family Reed is, that even Johnny's got to, like, book in time with him. Like, sir, it's your 3 o'clock. Oh, yeah, Johnny, right. I also loved how socially awkward Reed was. He seemed like a brilliant guy who...
Doesn't get out much
and doesn't do people very well. Pedro Pascal played that very well.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there's a few more things I could probably say, but that's the long and short of it for me. I don't know about you.
Yeah, no, I think I'm good.
Yeah, so in a nutshell, it's good. It's just a really cool movie to look at and be entertained by, and the action sequences are fun, and it's just good above average superhero movie. One of probably the most stylistic thing Marvel's ever put out, and it landed in a good way. And it's the best Fantastic Four movie that's ever been made. It does the family the most justice I've seen thus far. And I look forward to seeing where they go from here. For me, Fantastic Four is worth a watch.
Yeah, I put it at a mid-tier garbage, because it's good. It's watchable. I think you should watch it. Because it is enjoyable.
Yeah.
But I don't personally see myself ever rewatching it because it just doesn't have that rewatchability, and it's just, I don't know. It's good the first time around.
I don't think you'll be disappointed, but are you going to be mulling it over for months, days, years after?
That's what I mean. It's like mid-tier garbage. It's just, you know, content that's good enough to watch, and then you throw it out afterwards. And
yeah, that's about all, really. So where can we find you?
You can find me on Instagram at jchurchtpm.
And you can find me on Instagram at ThoughtPlane Media. And check out thoughtplane.ca for everything else we do. There's hundreds of posts there for free. And you can donate a buck or two there if you like our work and you're feeling generous. We hope to see you on the next close-up with Ryan and Joe and Justin. Till next time.
Take care.